You're bad.
Come on up, Lisa.
Thank you.
Exhibit A. Thank you, Kat. And thank you, Tim, for asking me. And thank you guys for reading. My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be asked to do anything in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous except for speak and tell my story. But I always say yes when I can, because, you know, I've learned that the things that have happened in my life, the things that I've been through, I've brought upon myself, or maybe have happened to me, I can help somebody else with that. And so I share my story to do that, you know. I hope you guys can get something out of this. So my sobriety date is April 8th of 2012. And coming up on, I'm about to be a teenager. That's very exciting, very fun. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I sponsor women. And being a sober alcoholic is really, honestly, the best thing in my whole entire life. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life, and it saved my life. And so let's start off with, back in my childhood, I always like to start there and just talk a little bit about that. I had a very privileged upbringing. My mom and dad wanted me to have the best of everything all the time. And I really did, no matter what happened with them, because eventually it wasn't so great, but I really had a very good upbringing. I had two loving parents, and they did everything they could for my sister and I. And so I'm very grateful about that. But at 8 years old, I remember for the first time hearing my parents fight. And I remember it caused such an impact on me and in me that I will never forget who I was on the phone with that day. You know, the corded phones that we used to have. Mm-hmm. The corded phone in my parents' bedroom, and I was talking to my friend Elena Garcia Carreras. And I didn't think my parents were fighting because they had never done this before. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And so I go out in the living room, and I see, you know, my parents are fighting. They're yelling at each other. It's really my mom yelling at my dad. And that just, that was that day, and that was the next day, and the next day, and it just kept on going. My dad was always trying to make it calm and not bring my sister and I into the arguments. He didn't want us to be around any of that, but my mom couldn't help herself to make it known that she was not happy. She threw things. She yelled. She did all the things that, you know, I never wanted to do, and then eventually I did as a mom, of course. You know, history repeats itself. But I say that to say my childhood was pretty chaotic because of that. You know, being around yelling and not knowing is today the day that they're going to, or is this the time that they're going to start yelling? You know, anytime they would start fighting and stuff like that, I would always try to make it a little bit better. You know, like, let me come in the room and be kind of fun so you guys will stop fighting. Let me do this and that'll change what you guys are doing. If I act this way, then maybe you won't fight today. You know, I don't know. I was always trying to change the atmosphere. You know, I was trying to control. I was trying to do that, control the atmosphere that I was in. And I never really could do that. You know, they were adults. I'm an adult now. You can't really change what's going to happen with people. Fast forward, and my parents actually did get divorced eventually, but I was 21 when that happened, so that was a pretty long time. My dad didn't move out of the house until I graduated high school. He wanted to, you know, keep it like that, and if it were up to me, if they would have asked, it would be like, come on. Let's go ahead and call it quits here. But, you know, they don't ask kids, usually, what they think. But they did it for us. You know, it had nothing to do with other than love for us, and they thought that having two parents in the home would help them better than just one. And so what happened for me is I didn't want to be around my parents a lot, you know, even though I absolutely, you know, I'm just going to say it like it is. I adored my dad, and I was a daddy's girl. And so I wanted to be around my dad all the time, and I always wanted my dad around me. And I loved my mom, but my mom was drinking all the time. And so since she would be drunk a lot, I mean, my dad was my go-to parent. And so I always felt safe around him and okay around him, and I loved when he would come around and we would do things together. I mean, he ended up, he did so much for my sister and I. He was really, I mean, he took me to get my first bra. Usually dads don't do that, but just all the things. So daddy's girl to the umpteenth. And so I go into my high school years, and I really hadn't done anything crazy. A lot of people have drank by this time, but for me, I hadn't done that. But as a freshman, all of a sudden, I know some of my friends are drinking and stuff like that, and I know my mom has Chardonnay in the refrigerator, and I get a glass of Chardonnay, and I smoke one of her Vantage cigarettes. And I thought it was very adult. You know, you always feel adult when you do that first kind of drink thing. And that was just a little drink. Now, the first time I drank to get drunk was also at 13 years old, and it was a four-pack of Bartles and James wine coolers. And I don't remember the flavor, but I'm sure it was delicious. My friend Lisa, my name is Lisa, and her name is Lisa. We were Lisa and the Cult Jam. So she drank her four, I drank my four, and we got trashed. And I just remember walking down the hallway and thinking, this is really funny. I thought I was walking sideways down the hall, and I thought it was super fun. That's the last thing I remember. I know I passed out. I don't know if I got sick. I don't know anything else from the night, but I thought it was the most wonderful thing to not feel, think, you know, for everything to just, I didn't have to think about anything. I could just be loose, because if you're anything like me, I just felt like I was like this all the time. I didn't realize that, but I was like this all the time. Always tensed up. I never knew what was going to happen. And once I put alcohol in my body, it was like this. I could breathe. You know, I finally could relax. And there was some calm within. And so, that was the story of my drinking. That's how I drank. And every time I drank, really, I drank to get drunk. That was, I don't really know why people drink. Normally, I don't know why you waste calories with one or two drinks. If you're going to do it, go big. You know, drink two bottles of wine, drink a full pack of whatever, have a couple shots with it. I don't drink just for the taste. And who really likes the taste anyway? So now I'm in my teenage years. I'm in high school, and I'm having a great time. I left high school because I could talk to everybody and have a good time and socialize. And I remember somebody sharing in a meeting one time about how they felt when they got home. When they got home and walked onto their driveway, they felt like they couldn't breathe again. But once they walked off of their driveway, they could breathe. And I was like, there it is. That's it right there, because that's exactly how I felt. Because it was one of those, you never know. You just never know what it's going to be like when you walk in that door. And I ended up asking my daughter if she felt the same way about her mom. She did. So, you know, it's something we could share that common bond, and we could have a conversation about that. But she has a sober mom, and that's a thank you, AA. So at 19 years old, I graduate from high school. I wanted the party to continue. All of my friends were going to college. I went to a community school, because I wanted to stay nearby. I wanted to keep the party going. I was so upset that everybody was leaving me. They were going to schools. They had goals. My only goal was to party, which I guess I accomplished that. I did do that. So, but that's all I did. You know, I was drinking to excess all the time. At 19 years old, I'm coming out of a bar with my boyfriend at the time, and I ran over a median, and I pull out from the light, I run over the median, and of course at the light back here, there are two cops. So needless to say, they pull me over. I'm 19 years old, I'm not even old enough to drink. And they told my boyfriend, you need to walk away and leave, and we're going to take her to jail. And that was Doraville. So I went to Doraville City Jail, and the only thing I was upset about, I was not upset about oh gosh, I'm going to be in trouble or anything like that, because trouble to me, my dad's going to pay my way out of it. My thought was, they are taking my jewelry. They are taking my jewelry and they're taking my accessories, and what is going on? That is why I was upset. I wasn't upset that I was getting in any type of trouble. But I called my dad, and that's what I cried to him. They've taken my jewelry, they've this, that, whatever, you know, and he comes and picks me up, and we go to the Waffle House, and we have a conversation, and then he takes me back home. I think it was $500 for that DUI. $500, and I may have had a due community service, but I'm not sure. But believe me, it caught up with me, and I had plenty of community service to do in the later future. Because I'll just cut to the point here. 19 was DUI number one, and at 40 I got DUI number 7. So I drank a lot through those years. And I got in a lot of trouble. At one point in time, I had 3 DUIs at one time within a 5-year time frame, and that makes you a habitual violator. And they do not take too kindly upon that, and you get a lot of trouble for that. And my dad paid them so I could get my license back. You know, that was, I believe me, I've done jail time. I haven't gotten out of everything, and at one point in time, my dad said, honey, I cannot pay your way out of anything else. They're going to put you underneath the jail. You know, so 3 and 5, habitual violator, I do finally get my license back from that, but, you know, I had 4 more to get after that. Consequences never did anything for me, and I don't know if it's because my dad paid my way out of it, because I still had to go to jail. I still had to go to jail. I still had to do the community service. I still had to, I went to work release. I've been on house arrest. I've had, you know, bless you, so many different consequences in my life. The consequences really didn't do it for me. You know, at one point in time, I had to do the work alternative program, and that's where you get to pay Gwinnett County to pick up trash on the side of the road. And that's pretty cool. That's a lot of fun. And, you know, you're in a safety vest, and you're in parks, and this is when I had already, so I'm married, and I have 2 kids, and at that point in time, married with 2 kids, and I've got this safety vest on with a prisoner's van, and people are, you know, scooting their kids away from me so that, you know, you're not near that prison lady over there. And you talk about ego deflation. There's some ego deflation for you, but do I think it has anything to do with my drinking? Absolutely not. You know, none of it had to do with my drinking as far as I'm concerned, because I thought I drank because I wanted to, and the consequences, yeah, they happened, but it's only because my husband was a jerk, because the cops were running my tag. They were out to get me. If this wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have gotten a DUI. I had an excuse for every single thing in my life. The great theme of me was zero accountability for my actions. And Peacetaker. Those were the 2 biggies. You know, I could rob a room of peace by walking into it and sitting down because I would be upset about something that I'm sure was my fault, but wanted to blame on somebody else, and I would come in a big storm and sit down so everybody's looking at me, oh, Lisa, what's going on? And then I could explain everything to you. But in the meantime, everybody else had been having a good time until Lisa walks into the room with whatever her drama du jour is, you know. And I used to tell everybody, I hate drama and chaos. And I really thought that I did. I mean, but let me tell you something. I think if you, at that time, looked up drama and chaos in the dictionary, that would have been me. You know, I just started it everywhere I went, and I did not realize that. You don't know until you know. And God is he is such a gentleman, you know, and he'll reveal it. The more you seek and search, but time takes time with that, you know. I'm grateful for the things that I've seen, that I have done, that I know it's me. It's not anybody else. It's me. And in 2010, So in 2010, January 10th of 2000, or I'm sorry, in 2010, I was court ordered to Alcoholics Anonymous. And at that point in time, I still was drinking because I wanted to. It had nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. Other people told me I had a problem. Obviously, the law was telling me I had a problem if the court was saying you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I myself, my husband was saying it. We were almost divorced. My kids were scared. My parents wanted me to go to alcohol, you know, to stop drinking. And I heard nothing. I went to AA because I was court ordered, but I did hear some things. I heard, go out and try some controlled drinking. It really is the one I hung my hat on. You know, I remember hearing that, and I'm like, I don't control my drinking anyway. I drink because I want to. You know, I remember thinking that. And it was also wonderful to hear the doctor's opinion talking about the phenomenon of craving, the things that happen to me when I put alcohol in my body, if I'm an alcoholic. You know, at that time, I didn't believe it. The phenomenon of craving, the things that happen, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, stuff like that. I heard it. I still didn't think it applied to me. I thought it was really cool that you guys wanted to hang out before the meetings and talk to each other and hang out after the meetings and talk to each other, but I don't need to do that. I'm going to hang with my drinking friends, and I'm going to drink water, and I'm going to be having a great time. And really what it was like when I hung out with those drinking friends when they were drinking and I was drinking water was the little boy whistling in the dark. Because there was nothing that I wanted more than anything but to drink. I wanted to drink so badly. But I put on a face like, I'm all right. This is great. I'm having the greatest time. And I was in hell on my insides, you know. It was an inner turmoil. Like, you know what that feels like. And so instead of drinking, you know, I did my time of going to AA, and then once I was done being court ordered, I drank again. And I drank with some knowledge about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it was about and about the phenomenon of craving and the things that happen when we drink and stuff like that. But still, I was of the belief that I drank because I wanted to. And so I get one of my friends to buy me a six-pack of beer. I get a friend to do that because, you know, God forbid somebody from AA see me buying a six-pack of beer. You know, I'm a grown woman having a friend of mine buy me a six-pack of beer. And I drink one. I drink two. I drink three. I drink four. I drink five. I drink six. And then I called one of my neighbors to put more beer for me in her mailbox. And that is when I finally knew. That's when I knew. Oh my gosh, I am what they say I am. And it was horrible. It wasn't a good feeling because, first of all, people are right. You know, people have been saying all this about me and all this time. You know, at least it's the alcohol. At least maybe it's the drinking. Maybe this. I never believed anybody. You guys know how, if you have had that profound psychic change, you know what it's like to one day think this way and the next day completely differently. And it's like, there's that day where I thought that I drank because I wanted to, then all of a sudden now I know that I'm drinking because I have to. I can't stop myself once I start. Once I know that, though, I don't really have a big solution because I've only been to a few AA meetings. And now I'm embarrassed to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and now I've drank again. And now since I've drank, the phenomenon of craving has kicked in, and I'm just going to keep drinking because I don't really have a solution yet. You know, I don't have a God of my understanding. I have a faith that I've had my entire life. I've always believed in God. You know, there were many times when I knew God didn't need to be thinking about me, because I was the biggest loser that this world has ever known. You know, plenty of times where I just felt like I just want to not exist any longer. But actually, two times I tried to kill myself. I can't believe I'm still here. Four times I tried in total, but two times I cannot believe I am here. But I'll tell you what, I know now, you know, God uses our pain for purpose. I do know that. So I'm now drinking. I now know, oh, the gig is up. I'm an alcoholic. Those people were right. And it's the darkest time of my life for about 6 months. You know, at that point in time, I had 6 DUIs. And for 6 months, anytime I would drink alcohol, the room would dim. It was the craziest thing in the world. It was a literal darkening of my soul. You know what I mean? But, you know, I get to my week of, I'm about to toss in the towel, but prior to that, January 10th of 2012, I get DUI number 7. And that's a really fun story for you guys. Because my husband is the one who called the cops on me driving in our neighborhood. And, good times. That, marriage solid. Honey, I love you. That was not a good day. So I had been at a neighbor's house drinking all day, you know, as per usual. This was always what I did, you know. Over here drinking, and I'm driving the car because I'm 4 houses away. I don't know why I drove. But I pull into the driveway, and I hit his truck. Yeah, but not bad. It was just a little hit. Wasn't anything major. And really, my car had no damage. I think there was a little dent on his truck. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done anything. I'm just saying he had had enough. He had had enough. I had just about drank up my marriage. I did this to him. You know, he used to go out to my car and disconnect things so I wouldn't drive. He would stand behind my car so I wouldn't pull out of the driveway, and I would pull around the house and off the sidewalk. Correct. So, you were talking about wild child. Yeah, this is not the woman standing here today, that's for sure. But, you know, I can't believe the things I used to do. But so, at that point in time, he was just sick and tired of me. You know, he's sick of it, you know. And he calls the cops. You know, I hit his car. And really what he thought was going to happen is that it was going to be an insurance thing. His whole point was not for me to get a DUI. But, dun, 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 guess what? That's what happened. So I pull down my street because I'm not about to stay in the driveway where he's calling the cops. You know, I got to go drive around the neighborhood. You know, lots of smart thinking when I'm drinking. And then I'm pulling back down my street, and I see a bunch of cops in the cul-de-sac of our street. And so naturally, I go, oh, pretty blue lights, and I pull right on down there. Because that's what I think you should probably do when you're drunk and driving a car. And so they asked me to get out of the car, and I was like, if you're trying to get me to do any road tests, I'm too drunk. I mean, I just want to tell you guys, at that point, that was going to be DUI number 7. I have had attorneys that have told me a million times, don't say anything. And my first thing that I say is, I'm too drunk to do your test. Because I thought, because I'm in a neighborhood, I'm not going to get in any trouble. And my house is right there. Can't you just let me go home? I mean, this is like 4 cops. This is 7 o'clock at night in a neighborhood. Everybody is standing out looking at why are all these pretty blue lights flashing. And I'm now handcuffed in the cul-de-sac. My husband is standing in the driveway looking. And I'm yelling, bleep you! Across. To him, this is all in front of all the neighbors. They're getting a big old Jerry Springer show right there. Episode number 289. There I am. You know, I said it probably a good, maybe solid 7 times. You know, and you, very attractive, very, very beautiful lady standing there looking like that. And they, of course, put me in the back of the car, and then the cop pulls me right in front of my house. So I have to sit there while they're doing their little. typing it all up. And this is a girl that's probably like, she's probably 15 years younger than I am then. And I was like, can't you just let me go home? You know, this my house is right here. And she was not having it. She was, she did not, she was like, no, you are not going home. This is, you know, number 7. This is, she's probably like, I can't wait to tell everybody what I got when I get back. I'm sure I told, because I don't remember everything, but I'm sure I probably told her, you know, I'm going to have your job or something, you know, really crappy like that, like we like to do to people sometimes. You know, you're a horrible cop and you don't know what you're doing and all that wonderful stuff. But I will tell you now, I will tell you that my perception has also changed on that because thank God they got me off the road. Because I was driving a loaded weapon. Loaded weapon. And I may have 7 DUIs, but I drove many more than 7 times drunk. So thank you, God, I never killed anybody behind the wheel of my loaded weapon or myself. You know, thank you, God. And I do believe, without a doubt, God was there. And I think every single time, every DUI, the 6 DUIs prior to number 7, God was like, here's your chance, here's your chance, here's your chance, here's your chance. I didn't hear it. I was too covered up in self. Me. I was too covered up in self to hear anything other than me. What about me? Poor me. Me. And so, DUI number 7. Good times. January 10th, 2012. And I called my husband from the jail when I get there. He doesn't answer. He didn't answer. He didn't come bail me out. My mom had to do that. It was horrible. It was such a horrible night. I mean, it was pouring. It was just, you know, it's how I felt. It was pouring outside. It was cold and it was gross and just, you know that feeling, getting out of jail and just, you already feel like such a loser. And then, you know, here's my poor mom. I have to wake up in the middle of the night, you know, yet again, that's what I did all the time. And so we get to the bail place and we do all that stuff and we go home and I get to do all the stuff for DUI number 7. But what started happening with this was my husband and I were going to get a divorce now. He was like, I am sick of you. Well, I said to him, oh, we're going to get a divorce now. He's like, yes, we are. I mean, like, I was thinking I'm such a prize. You know, why would you want to get rid of this? And he's like, yeah, we are done. Thank God, I want to get rid of you. But I now have a DUI attorney and a divorce attorney. And this is right before I get sober. And so I have a DUI and a divorce attorney. And that life is not looking real good at this point in time. It's not feeling real good. And I did not like me very much. I didn't have a lot of love and light going on. And, you know, my poor kids having to deal with all of that. I mean, you know, they don't ask for this. They don't ask for this. And to bring about the sadness and the uncertainty and the mistrust and the trauma that happens within them, it's something that I'm sure will be worked on for a very long time, you know, for a lot of people. And when I got sober, I told my daughter, and I still tell her, and my son, I caused you problems. I caused you harms. You may not know it today, and you may be happy I'm sober, but I caused you harm. This is going to come up at some point in time. You know, I didn't abuse my kids physically or anything like that, but they got to see me rage and throw things and break things. And, you know, I'm grateful I get to do that, but I don't blame them. You know, it's not their fault. They didn't ask for any of this. And so I feel like if my kids ever say anything to me, anything ever, like, Mom, you hurt me when you did this, I will say, I am so sorry, what can I do to make that better? Because I will for a lifetime be making amends to them, because it's not their fault. So I'm grateful to be a sober mom, super grateful for that. To be a sober mom and to be trusted and loved and, you know, and respected. My kids respect me. And that's pretty incredible because at that point in time, they were scared. And then, you know, I'm talking to my DUI attorney and I'm telling my DUI attorney, this is all about my husband. You know, my husband's the one that got me arrested. It's his fault. I'm not really an alcoholic. You know, I was really believing this in that moment. I am not an alcoholic. Telling him. And then we get to April, you know, the last week of my drinking, and my husband has taken the kids on spring break. I'm at home by myself, and I'm thinking it's going to be awesome. I can't wait because I can drink like I want to drink. Nobody's here. Nobody's going to be complaining, talking about it. I can do whatever I want to do. And my other friends were out on spring break with their kids. So here I am by myself in my house, drunk mom, alone. Husband is like, kids are afraid. My friends are like, Lisa, you got a problem. God has been talking to me, and I'm kind of hearing, but not fully. And I called one of my friends from high school, and I was like, I need help. I don't know what I'm going to do. I used to be in AA. You know, I was court ordered to AA before. I wasn't in AA because I did not do anything. Let me be clear. I listened to, like, some stories, but I was not in AA. He said, well, why don't you make Sunday your sobriety date? And that year, April 8th, that Sunday was Easter Sunday. I'm a Catholic, and he is too. And he said, you know, it'll be your rebirth. It'll be a, you know, you'll be reborn. That could be your day. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. And you guys know why it really was good, because I still could drink till Sunday. That was the best part of it. So I was happy about that. And then, so we get to Saturday, and Bob and the kids come home from spring break. Kids are scared. Bob's like, and I don't blame them. And I'm in this total victim self-pity mode. Like, I, looking back on how I acted, I'm just like, who is that person? But God is in the miracle biz. God's in the miracle biz. And that next day is, you know, my day one. Even that day I had drank before they got home. I don't even remember what I drank. I think I had like two drinks. I didn't even get drunk because I knew they were coming home, but I had to drink something. And then the next day it began. You know, the journey of my incredible, full, beautiful, fabulous, up, down, all the feelings life. Miraculous, God-filled, God-centered life that I get to have today. But so I go to AA and I get my white chip, and on the way home that day, I yelled at the top of my lungs, help me God, in my car. I will never forget it because that is the most sincere prayer that I've ever said in my entire life. The most sincere prayer. And wouldn't you know, to this day, I don't want to drink, you know. I don't want to drink. I put both feet in. I walked all the way in, and I sat all the way down, like Ralph White likes to say. I love that. And that's where it all began, you know. And so I got in there, and I listened. And I listened to the suggestions, and I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. They said, you know, in step two, we get to come to believe in a, you know, that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And I didn't realize that I was insane. And some days still can be. You know, some days I still need to be restored. I still can teeter on that line, but I have a program today that can get me, and a sponsor that can get me right back in line. If I get a little too far off the track, I have a home group I can go to, and people will be like, "Hey, Lisa, what's going on with you today? I see something different. You look sad. You look upset. You look..." That's why it's good to have a home group and go there. I have a wonderful prayer life today. You know, God is the center of all of it, because that's the whole thing. This program is about God and His kids. It's about me getting good with God and me getting good with you. You know, by making amends to people, I can walk around in the world and not have to be so embarrassed or think about, "Oh God, there's Sally that I, you know, talked about her to so-and-so. I've now sat across from her and made amends to her and openly admitted, you know, to my harm's cause and asked, what else can I do to make this right? You know, I've been a big girl. The thing that I never wanted to do, you know, I never wanted to act like an adult. If I had a problem in any relationship, I just wanted it to be done. I never wanted to talk to that person again. Because I just didn't want to be an adult and actually have a conversation, the hard conversation. But, you know, the longer I stay sober and I can walk through fear and faith because I've been taught it and I have watched it in other people that I admire and respect, it's so awesome to get on that other side every single time and go, man, God, you are so good. Thank you. You know, in sobriety, we can walk through anything sober. That's one of the coolest lessons that I've learned. And the reason why we can is because when we get here and we get that sponsor and we start working the steps and we're putting traditions behind things and putting principles behind things, when we are doing all of that together at the same time, going to meetings one by one, working with other people, eventually when things happen in our life, because they are going to happen, we don't have to drink over it or even think about it. In 2022, I lost my mom, and this past December, I lost my dad. And I feel like the rug has been ripped out from under me. But the cool thing is my dad was so proud of me. And he said it all the time. My mom and dad both got to stand up at my 10 years, and they gave me my medallion, and they both got to get, you know, it's just, and what's cool about that, see, God, you know, God is a hindsight God. I can turn around and go, oh my gosh, look at all these things lined up that He has done and put into place so that we're right here, right now, in this amazing, beautiful moment. Hindsight gift. One of my friends had died, and she was the one that was supposed to give me my medallion at 10. So I asked my mom and dad, and then she ended up dying that next year. So it's just, God's cool like that, you know. There are no coincidences and no mistakes. And each day I get to come back and get a little bit better. God does for me constantly what I can't do for myself, and a lot of times what I used to not do for myself. Today I listen, I'll sit down, suit up, show up, shut up. You know, I don't know everything. I don't know everything today. I used to know it all, and I don't today. And I'm just going to end with this. The Treasure of the Past, it's Daily Reflections from January 28. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that, in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. What a gift it is for me to realize that all those seemingly useless years were not wasted. The most degrading and humiliating experiences turn out to be the most powerful tools in helping others to recover. In knowing the depths of shame and despair, I can reach out with a loving and compassionate hand and know that the grace of God is available to me. Thank you, guys.
First I slipped, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, and there I see. I look into love's window, takes me where the promise is. All is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that sets me free. And I take me where the promise.